This is the Smallmouth Crush Podcast. If you're a hardcore angler, you've come to the right place. This is a weekly podcast that will interview some of the top smallmouth bass anglers in North America. Travis and his guest will discuss what it takes to consistently catch big smallmouth, and you'll get a glimpse inside the mind of a trophy smallmouth angler. And now, here's your host of the Smallmouth Crush Podcast, Travis Manson.
Hello, welcome to the Smallmouth Crush Podcast. My name is Travis Manson. Here we go, talking smallmouth, some of the top smallmouth bass anglers in North America. And today's guest could possibly have caught more smallmouth. I mean, I'm going to put him in like the top 10 in North America as far as smallmouth catches. I mean, I don't know what he catches, 5,000 smallmouth a year? No idea. We're going to talk to them about it. But before we go there, let's talk about The Real Shot. Of course, they sponsor this podcast, TheRealShot.com. All your bass tackle needs can be found there. Top brands like, you name it, Megabass, Jackal, Z-Man, staple brands like Berkley, VMC. They got it all. Huge selection of rods, reels. And they'll make sure they have what you need for your next big bass adventure or your tournament coming up. If you use my code SmallmouthCrush15 at checkout, you're going to get 15% off your first order, of course. Can't beat that deal. So head on over there and let them know Smallmouth Crush sent you. Big Daddy Will.
What's up, guys? How's it going?
Man, I'm excited, Will. You know, we kind of led to the topic of numbers and just massive amounts of fish catches under your belt. You have a heck of a guide service, and I know the waters that you fish are special because there's so many fish, so many good size fish as well as numbers. And sometimes it's very overwhelming when I do fish that body of water, because some days it doesn't matter what you throw at them, they're going to bite. But we've been up there when it's been tough, so it does have its days. You got to still know what you're doing when you're fishing your waters. But man, before we get into all that, Will, I know you run a guide service. Some of the people out there may not have ever heard of you before. So give me a quick background on yourself, Will, and kind of what you're up to.
I'm a Native American, Mohawk native, part of the Mohawk Nation in upstate New York. I've been this 2021 will be my 29th year guiding. So I'm going 29 years running my guide service, Mohawk Trails guide service. And, you know, we fish for smallmouth, largemouth, mainly smallmouth bass. A lot of my clients love the smallmouth bass fishing. And like, you know, depending on the time of year, late fall, I do guide trips for walleye. And, you know, we do some musky trips, but mostly smallmouth, largemouth, pike. We do some panfish, perch, things like that. Sometimes, but those are mostly the trips we do.
Right, right. So I know you fish a few tournaments. We've actually fished some tournaments before in the past and had some success. I know that's part of the game plan. I know you love doing that. As far as guiding, you are pretty much booked solid. So after this podcast, if you guys are interested in booking a trip with Will, I would get on the phone and get on your website. We're going to let everybody know how to find you here towards the end, but very popular guy. You got a lot going on. And I think the big draw is just the sheer numbers of fish and the fact that you have a little unique situation on your waters because of the fact that you're Native American. Right. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, we have the, you know, for us being Native American, we have our own rules, laws, regulations that we follow here. And, you know, I get the early season bite on our territorial waters. I can start guiding before the actual state season opens. So that gives me, you know, a little advantage there, catching them that pre-spawn. But I don't guide. We normally don't fish the spawning times when they're spawning. We leave them to do their thing, but we do our fishing pre-spawn. So, I mean, you know, that kind of gives me an advantage being a guide up here on the territory to, you know, to get out early before anybody else can. My clients can come up and they can come fishing with me on the territorial waters here. And I mean, we have our own regulations, our own rules here. You know, during the season, you can get a tribal license and come here whenever you want, fish on your own. But before the season, you have to have a community member or a guide with you.
Okay.
And that's the only way you can get into the waters here.
Right. A lot of people, you know, in upstate New York, if you're not familiar with it, there's, I think, some of the dumbest rules when it comes to fishing out there. The fact that they closed the smallmouth season down in two counties on some of the best smallmouth waters out there. And then they like to open it right during the spawn. And so none of that makes sense. I know we could talk for hours just about that.
Right.
Love to see a catch and release during that time period. You know, May and all of June, let's just do a catch and release and then open the season up officially in July. But I don't make the rules. We just have to follow them. But if you want to get around them, of course, booking the trip with you, they're going to experience some awesome fishing that a lot of people in that region don't get to experience simply because they don't. It's illegal. You can't do it unless, of course, you're on your reservation and you're with a Native American or a guide. And so that's right. A pretty cool deal. Fish numbers. I mean, on a good day, well, what are you looking at sometimes?
Well, I mean, there's days. I mean, we'll go out like, well, you've been out where we've done 200-300 smallmouth in a day. You know, we get, you know, on average, you will catch 150 fish a day during any time. I mean, you were saying, you know, you've been there in the worst of times. What was worse for us? Maybe we caught 100 fish.
Right. Yeah, I was thinking back to last fall when it was like 30 degrees out and 40 mile an hour winds, and we still caught a 20 plus pound bag and probably 40 fish. So yeah, I guess it's not that bad.
40 smallies, but then we did go catch 60, 70 walleye half the day.
We did. Yeah, you truly have such amazing. I mean, the walleye, the smallmouth, the size of the muskies that are in your waters. It's pretty crazy. So what we're actually talking about, it's the St. Lawrence River, of course, but it's below the dam. And then also known as Lake St. Francis is, a section of that river before it flows out towards Montreal.
Right.
And it's truly has some giants. And there's actually a lot of big named tournaments that come to those waters as well at certain times of the year.
Well, the Canadian side, they have the biggest tournaments in Canada come to our waters and things like that. I'm actually working on bringing some of the big Bassmaster FLW. We're working on a park, event park. Myself and a few of the community members are working on that to try to bring them here and things like that. But, you know, our waters are, like some place like Lake Champlain, they protect certain areas. We basically do the same thing. And that's why they have such good fishing. You were just commenting about, you know, having certain regulations in place at certain times, you're catch and release things or slot limits. Slot limits is a really good thing to keep your fisheries really healthy, things like that. But, you know, we have our own, like I said, we have our own rules and regulations here that, you know, we protect our fish, our population of fish. So, you know, so when you guys come back every year, whoever comes back every year, they have fish here, you know, just waiting for them to catch.
Mm. Yes, yes. And some of the funnest smallmouth days I've had have been on your bodies of water. Now, you're not too far from the upper side of the St. Lawrence River either, out of Messina. A lot of big tournaments go out of there. I know you've spent plenty of time on Lake Ontario, and you really get around everywhere. Oneida, Lake Champlain, there's a lot of good bodies of water. If you had to choose, though, and I think I know your answer already, where's the best smallmouth fishing located?
No, the best smallmouth fishing anywhere in the country is right here in my own waters. Mm. I told guys like one time I was talking to Mark Zona. He came up and fished here. We did a show here. I guided him around to do a show with one of his guys, and we were talking, and he was doing he did a show with KVD. And KVD was talking about a place in Michigan being the best smallmouth fishery. And I told Zone, I said, you got to tell Kevin. I said, I got a bone to pick with him. I said, about the fishery. He has to come here and try mine before he goes. And he makes statements like that. We were joking around. And so when Zona fished here, Zona's like, he goes, I don't know, Bill. He goes, the smallmouth we caught here, the numbers we caught here is just, he goes, I don't think I've ever experienced that anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, we've had biologists come here in the past and, they did, fish studies on sturgeon, muskie, walleyes, bass, and the biologists in the past, they told us, we have a pretty big population of fish. And she was wondering why we have that. And I said, because we have our own regulations in place that protects our population of fish. Certain times of years, there's certain types of waters, certain areas you cannot go in. Mm-hmm. And, I use Champlain, the game refuge, and on the Vermont side, as one of the things they say, they have buoys there, and there's certain areas where you can't go past those buoys any time of the year. It just, when you have those protections in place in certain water systems, the fish, you know, the science and everything there tends to show that those fisheries thrive. They really grow like giant fish.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And to kind of describe to the viewers and the listeners here, that section of the St. Lawrence is truly unique. I mean, of course, it's got the beauty that you would find up in the Thousand Islands stretch as well. It's got a lot of that type of structure, islands, rock formations, ledges, humps, a lot of grass that grows offshore as well. But then you can literally go another mile or two downriver and you're into what I'm going to describe as like, looks like the Everglades. Just thick vegetation. Looks like you're in Florida. And you can literally punch for largemouth on one side of the boat and catch smallmouth on the other on a drop shot in 30 feet of water. It's crazy.
Yeah, the ledges that are there, we have mats close to drop-off ledges where, you know, we've done that. Travis is up front trying some largemouth, or I'd be up front, front flipping for largemouth. He's drop-shotting off the back of the boat into 25 feet of water, catching smallies. Yeah, we have a lot of, you know, the ecosystem we have here, like guys come up here and that's the first thing they say when I take them for largemouth, they're like, boy, this looks like we just went right into Florida, right into, you know, to Lake Okeechobee. Yeah. Scott Martin himself, when he came up here 2 years ago and fished with me, that's the first thing he said.
Right.
And you know, that's what I said to Scott. I said, Scott, you know, everyone says that when they come up here. Yeah. The first thing they see when I take them largemouth fishing, they're like, man, this takes me right to Florida. This looks just like Florida water.
Right. Except crystal clear water.
Yeah.
On top of that.
Yeah. It looks like spring water. It looks like you're looking into a spring water bottle.
Yeah. It's really, really unique. So I want to talk about, you know, some different techniques that you utilize when you're fishing the river. For those that don't know, Will actually owns a bait company, God Joe Baits. I use a lot of your products. They catch fish. Obviously, you've designed it for that specific reason to be able to target those fish on the St. Lawrence River, but it really is an amazing bait lineup of baits that work all over the country. I know you got guys using your baits down in Florida, down in Texas, but yeah, they really do excel when it comes to smallmouth fishing in the northern part of the country. How did you get involved with your bait company? When did you start this? And give me a little background on that.
Well, I started, being a fishing guide when I first started catching those sheer numbers of fish through the spring. I mean, you can imagine having, like, you know, other baits, Senkos and Dingers and other brands using their baits. And, you know, imagine how many Senkos you would go through to catch 100, sure, small, 200 smallmouth in a day, how many packs. So when I first started reading about doing your own hand pours, and so, you know, I started messing around with doing just my own style Senko stick, just hand pouring it. And, you know, I would start in the wintertime when it was my downtime, everything's frozen up. I'd go in my shop and just hand pour all winter. So come springtime season, when I'm getting ready to guide, I'd have, you know, a ton of baits for my clients to use. And so my clients would come up and they, you know, they started liking my baits over, you know, because of the durability of them, the action of them, things like that. And so they wanted to start buying them. So I was, you know, selling some here and there to some of my clients, and I couldn't sell everything. And so one day, that's when I moved into doing, I went from doing hand pours to hand injected and stuff. And then I partnered up with a friend of mine, a fishing friend of mine. And, you know, we built up another company. And then when we separated ways, he went his way, I went my way. And I just continued on with my own thing, doing my own baits and stuff like that. And it's grown over the years, over the past 6 years, it's really taken off, the bait company.
Yeah, it certainly has. The Gajo Spirit Shad comes to mind as a, you know, one of the go-to drop shot baits of my choice. And you make some great colors. You know, it's just, they all catch fish. It's a real unique bait because, you know, it resembles the goby, but it also resembles pretty much any type of bait fish that's out there. So you could use it in waters that don't have gobies, but of course, if you are fishing around waters that do have gobies, it's an excellent, excellent choice. Walk me through, like, you know, early season when you're guiding on that body of water. If someone does book a trip with you, obviously, you know, unfortunately for us, we can't just come up there in our own boats. We do have to have a guide. So, what are you targeting that time of year, and what kind of baits are you using?
Usually it's smallmouth is the early fish. The pike, the large, some pike do move in earlier, but usually it's smallmouth, pike, largemouth, but first it's smallmouth. And I usually start Senkos, anything dragging. You can throw Senkos, tubes, grubs, anything you want to drag slow along the bottom, because the water temperature is still cold that early in the season. Mm-hmm. So the fish, they're not really like super active chasing until that water hits around like 49, 50 degrees. Then it, you know, they kind of speed up a little more and start chasing spinner baits, swim baits.
How soon are you catching fish in the spring? Like what water temps?
Well, the earliest I've ever caught them was March 26th. And that was right around 36 degrees, 35 degrees in the river. Mm-hmm. For some reason, the tributaries where we start off in, they warm up quicker than the St. Lawrence, but then they also cool down quicker than the St. Lawrence, than the main river. So in the spring, that river water heats up quicker. And the earliest trip I booked was the 1st of April. I caught them March 26th. And as soon as I announced the fish were running, I had trips booked right first day in April. I started guiding. But I usually start around the 20th of April. And okay. I run until like the 10th, 15th of June. And then that's before the season. Then I shut down because the spawn's going to start. And I'm done. And then I pick back up. I start booking again in September 1st for my fall runs. I'll start guiding these after the second weekend. And I take booking September 1st. And then it's usually the second Monday of October is when I start guiding again. And that goes right until the river freezes up. This year, the last day I was out was, I think it was January 20th. That was my last day. I actually went out fishing by myself.
Did you catch them?
Oh, yeah. I got a lot of walleyes.
Wow.
Oh, a few smallies because the water temperature was back down 34, 35 degrees. And the smallmouth bite is just incredible. Or the walleye bite is just incredible here.
I've experienced that. How are you catching those smallmouth in that super cold water in the fall then?
Well, in the fall, I use the Ned rigs. We throw Senkos. We slow down. We throw swim baits. You know, we throw Z-Man swim baits. We throw Gudgeo swim baits. Mostly Neds. It's a slower technique that cast out, pause, let it sit for a few seconds, and then drag it. Same thing with the swim baits. You're just swimming them slow along the bottom.
Yeah, right. And you just came out last year with your version of the Ned, which is a real unusual twist to a standard Ned rig bait. I've had the opportunity to fish them. We did really well on them last fall up there. And it's been working well for me all year. After that, these fish just love it. I've caught a handful of largemouth on them on the Chesapeake Bay too. So it's definitely a great bait.
Since we've launched, I've had guys order from all over the country. I've had guys order from California, Washington State, Seattle, that area. One of the guys was using them last fall to catch salmon on them. He asked me, do you have bubblegum ones, pink ones, the bubblegum color? And I said, well, I did a sample run of some. I said, I didn't put them out on the market. I said, they were just samples and stuff like that. He goes, can you send me some? So I sent him a few packs, and he started sending me back pictures of salmon he was catching on them, because I guess pink's like a huge color out there. Steelhead and salmon that they have out there. They love bubblegum colored baits. Right. And so stuff like that. I've had guys send me pictures from Clear Lake, throw in Neds. Surprisingly, Clear Lake in California, you're thinking giant, 12-inch swim baits and stuff. And this guy's sending me pictures, 8-10 pound largemouth he's catching with my Neds. Now, I don't know if he's bed fishing them or how he was fishing them, but he's sending me pictures. He's like, they're crazy. They're loving the bait.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, absolutely. It does work. What's your favorite way to catch smallmouth? If you could pick one.
That's tough, bro. Is really tough. I mean, I consider myself a junk fisherman.
Okay.
I throw everything. I actually fished. Here's a story. I actually fished with Woo Daves in one of the Bass Opens when I was fishing as a co-angler. And, it was in the town of Catskill on the Hudson River. And I drew him as my boater. And, we're running down to our spot to get to our spot. And he turns around and he's flipping these the train bridges and stuff. And I'm casting away. And he turns around and he starts smiling and he's laughing. And he goes, I had two Zepco 2-2 push button rods in the boat. And he's looking, he goes, are you serious? He throws Epcos. And I said, yeah. I said, I use them with flukes to throw them in certain areas. And he turns around, opens up his live well or his rod locker. He's got six Zepco 2-2s in there. He used the same thing. I mean, he's considered like the king of junk fishing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I was talking about, you know, the things I do, it was similar to what he does. Just, you know, it's kind of hard. Like, you know, I like throwing jigs. I like throwing wacky rig. Wacky rig senkos is probably one of my favorite ways to fish. Probably my most popular, next to throwing the net, of course. Mm-hmm. But I like throwing my little jigs that I'm working on. I'm trying to come out with a little line of my own tungsten jig. Well, you've seen them last year.
Yeah, yeah. So you like to put some type of creature bait on just a football head and kind of drag it around?
That's what I throw.
The places that you fish, it's so unique because there's a lot of rock, clear bottom. You're going to have some bare spots. That's kind of what you look for, right, when you're targeting these fish, especially the shallower fish. In shallow, I mean, what, probably 15 feet or less, sometimes 4 to 10?
Yeah, the majority of the year, I'm 15 feet or less. That's spring, even in the summer, early summer, they go out, like right after the spawn, they get into that there's that 3-week, 4-week period where they don't want to feed as much. They only feed certain. They're just roaming shallow water looking for their comfort zone. And, I 90% of the year, I'm 15 feet or shallower.
Yeah.
But I'm out there throwing. Because the bottom we have here, we have, like, in this northern area, we have a lot of, clay, sandy bottom, gravel bottom, a lot of boulders on flats, things like that. Those are the type of things I look for. I target things like that.
Okay. Tell us a crazy story, man. I know you take a lot of clients out there. What's some of the most memorable days or things that have happened to you while on the water? I know you got a ton.
Well, there's the one video where I caught a 5-pound smallmouth 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And actually Scott Martin and them were filming one of his SMC challenges. And, they were fishing next to me and I was talking to him and I actually cast it towards him to mess with him. I said, Scott, watch this. I said, I'm going to catch a smallmouth right next to you. And, you know, I sat there and I casted my net. Well, actually, I was using a Spirit Shad as a net rig. I catch a 5-pound smallie. And so, you know, it jumps literally 10 feet in front of Scott. And Scott's like, holy cow, Will, that's a 5-pound smallmouth.
Giant,
and
right?
Really. And then it jumps again. And it's sitting there and he's just watching it. And it jumps again. It's like, why is this 5-pound smallie jumping so much?
Okay.
And right on the fourth jump, it goes to jump. And this giant muskie comes up and just takes it.
Come
and
on.
Swallows this whole. It literally has my smallmouth, my 5-pound smallmouth down his throat. I have it on 6-pound test fluorocarbon line. And I'm sitting here playing with this thing, fighting back and forth. I don't have it hooked. I don't have
smallmouth hooked. The smallmouth is hooked and the muskie has it in its mouth.
Yeah, it's in its mouth. It's swallowed. It's jammed in there. And I'm sitting here playing this thing. I fought it for 15 minutes, and we actually got it on video where we got it in the boat. We got the muskie in the boat. And we
how?
It was just great. Well, we fought it. And, I was in my boat, and I had Scott come over, and the film crew was filming. And I had Scott get next to me because I didn't have a net. Nobody had a net because we weren't out muskie fishing. So I didn't have a muskie net. I didn't have any grabbers, anything. Usually, you know, in my guide boat, I have the lift grabbers for pike and things like that. I didn't have any of that. And I pull up and so I had Scott reach down in there. Scott reached in the video. He reached down and he grabbed it and pulled it up on the deck of his bass boat. And we got the thing in and there's footage of it with the smallmouth in its throat. The whole, it was just crazy. It was a crazy, one of the craziest things I've ever found. And then, one of the craziest stories was Joe posted a picture. I don't know if he posted the video. This past fall, I caught a fishing pole. We're out testing a prototype bait, prototype colors and Neds. And we're just casting offshore. And he catches a smallie. I throw, catch a smallie. And we're just, we're sitting here picking small. And all of a sudden, I feel like I got a snag. So I pull on. All of a sudden, it gives out. So I'm thinking, it's a stick. And I pull the tree branch. And I'm reeling. It looks like a tree branch coming. I'm reeling. All of a sudden, I look and I pull up, and I got a Zepco Rhino rod, spinning rod.
Okay.
So I'm like someone's rod, some kid.
A Zepco, right?
Yeah, Zepco Rhino rod. So I grab it and I pull it up, and I'm looking at it, and all of a sudden I'm looking at the reel, and I'm not a real enthusiast about reels, and I turn around and Joe, he knows a lot about Shimano's. And I'm like, hey, Joe, what's a Stella 3000 Shimano worth? And Joe's like, daddy, are you crazy? And I was like, no, that's what it says on the reel. So he comes running over and looks at the reel. And it's like a $699 fishing reel. $699, $700.
$700 spinning reel.
$12 Zepco Rhino rod.
Oh, you buy my God.
Walmart. It was just crazy things like that happen all the time.
Yeah, I would say.
We have a lot every year.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff going on.
Well, I mean, you're out there a lot, you know, pretty much every day. You're gonna run across some interesting things on the water for sure. How about your clients? Where do they come from?
Oh, they come from all over. I have clients from the West Coast coming in from California. I had clients here last year. Even though pandemic was going on, they had to do safety. They had to do the quarantining. They still came up to fish and stuff like that. But I've had them all the way from Florida, Texas, Georgia, Louisiana, California. I even had a couple of Europeans a few years ago come over from England that were carp fishermen that come to experience the carp. See, we have we have some of the biggest carp in the country, in the world here, in our waters. Uh-huh. And so the European carp fishermen love to come here and fish. And so I took some of them out bass fishing. So now they're coming back not only to carp fish, but now they're coming back to bass fish. They're, I think they were from Birmingham, England.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's probably about the furthest I've ever had anybody come.
Right.
Yeah, well, I mean, I had a couple of guys from Japan came and they fished with me.
Yeah.
I've had everybody come and fish with me, all the guys from Leeds to TV people, celebrities, football players, just everybody.
Yeah.
Had congressmen, senators come fish with me.
Sure. Yeah. It's, it is some of the best fishing in the world located right there. No doubt. It's interesting, you know, the numbers of fish as well as the size. Walk me through like some of your best days fishing out there and the conditions that you experienced and what you caught them on as far as numbers and things like that.
As my one buddy, he his first trip up, he was one of the first guys actually cramped up his arm. And so when he was on Facebook, he made this post about great fishing. And then he put out a disclaimer like, don't make this your first trip of the year. He goes, make it like your third or fourth because you're going to cramp. He goes,
yeah, you got to warm up for this.
Yeah. And he goes, if you do, he goes, make sure you start training your hook setting arm for at least a week or so before you get up there and fish a whale. Cause he says it is going to cramp up. And, you know, guys laughed about it. Other people laughed at his posts and stuff. And then when they actually came up, the same thing happened to them from setting the hook so much, trying to fight those fish so much in the current and stuff that their arms cramped up. So it's just a little funny thing that goes on. You could take the whole tackle box and just anything. You could take the ugliest fishing lure you've ever tried. You've seen something that you've seen in a garage sale. Maybe you found in a tree somewhere and it's been in the water for 20 years and the paint's faded. It just looks hideous. You know, any other fish anywhere else would look at it and be like, whoa, get that thing away from me. Now you throw it out here and they're all over it. It's crazy, crazy.
Yeah, I've experienced some good days up there. To you, it's kind of a regular thing. I know, just a side story here, just waiting for you at the boat ramp. Yeah. I busted 22 pounds casting from shore.
Thanks to Travis, everybody knows about Indian time now.
Right, Indian time. Will's always running late. And so...
So if Travis says, okay, Will, I'll meet you there at 8 o'clock. I know he's always trying to trick me. He tells me, okay, well, I'll meet you there, Eric. He really wants me there at 7:30. Mm-hmm. So he says, I'll meet you at 7:15. Why? Because he knows I'm going to be there at 7:30. So if he tells me be there at 6:30, I'm always 15 minutes behind, that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I know.
Sometimes the sun ain't out. So my sundial, my native
way right.
doing things doesn't work, so I get lost track.
You can't tell what time it is. So during the middle of the summer, let's talk July, August. I know you're not doing as much guiding. You're out there quite a bit, just fun fishing and things like that. Yeah. What are you looking for that time of year? Is it typical St. Lawrence River stuff that you would find in other sections of the river? Are you getting out a little deeper as well, or is there still fish shallow during that time of the year?
Well, that July and August, the fish, they set up everywhere on the St. Lawrence. You could catch them in 2 feet of water. You can catch them in 50 feet of water. It all depends on what you're prepping. The way the St. Lawrence fishes, it's basically any technique will work here. you, like I said, you can drag tubes deep. You can cast them shallow. You can throw swim baits deep and drag them deep, or you can go up into 2 feet of water and throw them. It's, you know, whatever your favorite preference of fishing is, you can do that here and catch smallmouth, you know, virtually anywhere in the St. Lawrence.
If someone's just starting out and they want to come up there and do some fishing, where's a good place to, like, where do you suggest somebody starts for locating these fish? You know, of course, let's assume they have the right electronics and they're just kind of going along. Are you taking a look at the lake map or the river map or your graphs? And what are you looking for to begin?
What I look for when I go into any river system depends on the time of the year. Pre-spawn, post-spawn, if it's it. Post-spawn, I go in, I usually start at the mouths of any, like, shoals, any offshore structure at the mouth of any of the spawning rivers or the tributaries coming off the main river or the main lake. I will start at the first humps, drop off, shoals, searching structure in those areas. And it doesn't have to be a rock pile. It could be just a sudden drop going from 10 to 15 feet where they're holding on.
Okay.
So I usually start doing that type of searching when I come into a new water system. Like I said, depending on the time. Summertime, it could be anything. Mm-hmm. Late summer, then I usually start looking deep, staying in that 15 to 30 foot waters, that type of stuff, into the fall. And then when it turns fall, they go back shallow. Basically, in the fall, they're basically anywhere. You can catch them, you know, from 50 feet up to 2 feet again.
Now, there's some certain stretches of the river, especially by you, where does get narrow or produces a heck of a lot of current. Some of the most current I've ever seen on the St. Lawrence River is down in your section. Right. I'm talking whitewater, right? It looks like it's scary. It's scary. You're running through on your bass boat at full speed where you think it should be like one of them, those boats you see with the rubber, you know, whatever it's called. Those inner tubes, you know, just some craziness, dude. Whitewater rapid, that's the term.
Yeah,
the jet dude.
Boats they use in Alaska to run up those rapids. Yeah. Exactly.
Yes. Scary stuff. Yeah. But those fish hold in there. So you're fishing a lot of, you know, what's the most, I guess, the best technique to target those fish? Because they do live in that heavy current and it's so hard to fish it properly. A lot of, you know, the first couple times I was up there, I was really confused until you showed me. But you guys do a lot of dragging with a drop shot, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll use a, you know, I go like during the lake conditions, you're using a quarter ounce, 3/8, sometimes a half. But in the current conditions up here, you're in current, you'll be using halves, 3/5, 8, 3/4, even 1 ounce drop shot weights, 1/2 ounce, 3/4 ounce, even 1 ounce tube heads, things like that, football heads, things like that, heavier bases to slow yourself down. But the other thing in the current is your boat control. How to use your trolling motor to slow yourself down. You want to stay out here. We usually, the rule of thumb is right around 1 mile per hour. It will give you a good drift. Because if you just let it go, you can get up to 3, 4, 5 miles an hour in some of these areas.
Mm-hmm.
So you use your trolling motor to keep yourself around 1 mile an hour. That's pretty standard. You will be able to feel bottom. That's the main thing when you're doing that is feeling bottom and things like that. But it's your boat control and just, you know, choosing your weight. Whatever weight keeps you in contact the most without letting out a ton of line, because in current, again, your line bows. I mean, it makes like a really big bow in current. So depending, you go to heavier weight to try to keep as much bow out of your line.
Yeah. It truly is something that takes getting used to when you are fishing that way. I mean, you're looking at the shore and you're just cruising. You're just flowing. You're going with the river and there's nothing you can do about it. So you try to get on that trolling motor and keep that boat positioned properly while you're dragging your bait. So we're not making casts. We're not, because you just can't. You're literally holding that rod out with either a tube or something on the bottom. Drop shot is a great way. I really like a drop shot bait that has a little kick that kind of swims along as you're doing that. Right. There's a lot of good drop shot baits to use for that technique, but keeping that bait, keeping good contact with that bait, and then covering water. So you're making long drifts and you're trying to narrow down where these fish are positioned, right? And once you catch one, you may start seeing where you only got 50 yards that these fish are holding in, and it may only be a 3-minute drift, right? And you're back up on the big motor.
Right, exactly. What you'll see is like out on the St. Lawrence towards Thousand Islands, there's rock piles, there's ledges, there's underwater ledges. And what that creates is what they call is a current break. A rock pile is, you know, a current break for the fish. And these smallmouth are always keying on things like that, current break.
Sure.
Rock piles, especially rock piles in the St. Lawrence, it gives them some place to get out of the current so they can rest. Because 99% of that time, those smallmouth are right in the current swimming. They're constantly swimming. Like guys come up here and they're always like, well, these smallmouth, they fight so strong. We've caught them in other places and they're just, they fight. I said, that's because they're river fish. They've been in that, you know, 5 mile an hour current their whole lives. They're strong fighters.
Yes.
And you'll notice the smallies up here compared to other places, they're just thick. They're not as long, but they're thick. They're real thick. Everybody calls them footballs. They're so thick. And that's because of the river fish. They're a river smallie.
Yep.
And but yeah, most things, there's underwater currents, underwater humps you can look for. It's basically just reading your graphs, reading the current, how the current flows in the river. You can go to the NOAA sites and things like that, to get the current flows, lake levels, things like that. That's the type of information you look up before you come in. There's Google Maps. You can look on Google Maps to find areas to that, you know, you can actually see some current break edges and shoals and humps on Google Maps in certain areas.
And as far as numbers, not only that, there's giant fish that live there. What was like, there was a recent tournament not too long ago that was like five fish for some crazy number. Do you remember what that was? It's like 30.
I know the guy that held he held the record here for a long time. And then it got broke in Lake Simcoe, and then it came back here again.
Uh-huh.
And it was like 31 pounds for five fish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was a really big record. And then I guess they did like almost a 32-pound bag on Lake Simcoe. And then it came back here again. It was 32.4, I think, was the big bag caught here for five.
Six-pound average.
Yes.
What's the biggest smallmouth you've ever caught?
Do I need to go there?
Do you know? Is it big?
The biggest I've ever seen, but it was in a study net they had.
Okay.
Was over 10 pounds.
Come on.
They caught it in a gill net when they were doing studies. They were tagging, checking fish and the main, and it was a 10-pound smallmouth. But I've never in all my years have seen anything bigger than that.
That's crazy.
But I don't net and do the fish studies like the biologists do when they come here. They say, like 300-foot gill nets, they catch everything in a water system.
Uh-huh.
Now, I've seen 300 and 400-pound sturgeon caught in the nets. I've seen a lot of that. I've seen monster muskies, 50-60-pound muskies caught in the nets.
Jeez.
But to catch those fish, it's like, I guess it's kind of like going after Loch Ness, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you go out and throw nets out and catch them, I don't know.
Right.
I've done that.
I know you get multiple 6-pounders every year.
Yeah,
without a problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the biggest I've had in my boat was a 9.4.
9.4.
A 9.4. And that was a pre-spawn fish.
Sure.
So it was a massive smallmouth, but that was like 8 years ago.
Wow.
And I've caught in sevens. I've had clients catch sevens, eights, eight twos, eight fours, things like that.
Yeah. But yeah. Whew.
You know, the majority of the smallmouth are between 3 and 6 pounds. That's the majority of them.
Yes. Yeah.
But there's a lot of them.
A lot of good action. Yeah. 4 or 5 pounder is nothing to, that's a good fish anywhere in the country. So you can expect.
In our northern waters, a fish that big over 4 pounds, that fish is 20 years or older.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all the biology, well, you know, I do follow a lot of the studies and stuff like that. I take like students and professors out from colleges and take them out catching fish for them to take samples and do their studies and stuff. And they're in the studies and I get reports and I ask questions myself from the biologists. And they said in these northern waters, those fish over 4 pounds, or smallies over 4, they're 20 years or older.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, I can't even imagine what a 6-pound smallie is.
Yeah.
It's that massive.
They've been chilling down there at the bottom of the St. Lawrence for many, many years. That's for sure. They know every nook and cranny. What's the bait of choice down there? Are they just goby eaters or are they doing a little bit of shad, minnows, crayfish?
Well, the gobies in my water system, like the Gopis were in Lake Ontario before they were in here. That's just weird. People thought they would come from the ocean and come this way. They were brought in. So they say the studies they did, they were brought in on the, in the ballast water on ships, from ships from overseas, came in, I guess from the Middle East, they're saying, in the ballast waters. And they let them loose, you know, when they dumped their ballast waters out of ships, that got into Lake Ontario Lake. For some reason, it seemed to start in Lake Erie. That's where it really took off. And then it slowly moved to Lake Ontario. And we got them in here about 4 years ago, really started noticing them here in our water system, the Gobies. Mm-hmm. But no, we still have a big population of, we got a huge population. And I think it's because a huge population of crayfish and the bait fish, the emerald shiners and perch. But our population of crayfish, like in the evening, you can go out any shoreline here.
Yeah.
And it's rocks, little rocks everywhere, and shine a flashlight in the water. And you'll just see hundreds of crayfish just scooting everywhere.
Yep. I've noticed that at the boat ramps, you'll see where the raccoons and stuff were feeding on them.
Yes.
All the carcasses and, you know, claws and stuff washed up along the shoreline. So, yeah, I know there's a huge crayfish population, which is great. You know, a lot of the parts of the Great Lakes, that population's kind of dwindling down a little bit. So it's good to hear that that's going on there. Another question I always ask every guest that's on, you know, if I had to say, well, this is, I'm going to give you one bait to use the rest of the season, this is all you can throw to catch smallmouth, what's going to be the bait of choice? What are you picking up?
Oh, man, it would have to be, well, I mean, I'd have to say my spear shad beforehand.
Uh-huh.
Since I came out with my Ned, I would have to go with my Ned rig.
Ned, that's a good... A lot of people pick the Ned rig. It's versatile. You can fish it deep. You can fish it shallow. You can drop shot it. You can put it on a jig head. You can put it on the back of a... Well, I don't know if we can give you a jig to put it back on, because that's technically two baits. But how about this? If you had one color to pick for a Ned rig, what would it be?
It would be my green pumpkin blue highlight.
Yeah, that is a good color.
That just
color.
Catches them everywhere. That catches them Oneida, Erie, every Great Lakes. The guys are catching them in the south. They're catching them in Smith Mountain Lake, Kentucky. I just got reports from the guys fishing down there in Kentucky Lake right now. Pounding. I just sent orders.
Wow.
We sent, over the last 3 days, we sent like 68 orders to all those guys that are fishing in the
down
there. Wow. The guys are in Pickwick right now. The one guy's like, I've been pounding smallies for 2 days on your blue.
Yep. It's an awesome color. I know you make it in the Gajo stick and the spirit shad in the swim baits as well.
Yeah.
Right. So it's there's something special. I find anytime you can get a standard color like green pumpkin, which works great, and then you can add a little something to it. And for some reason, that formula that you have really allows that bait to stand out amongst other baits. Like if you put up a standard green pumpkin and yours, you have a noticeable difference where the belly of that bait or the bottom of it has what you call that highlight, that glow almost, right? I don't know how else to describe it.
Right. We were one of the first, when I was with the other company, we were one of the first companies to start using that color. We were the only ones on the market that had that color. And then when it exploded and took off and it started catching on, now other companies started catching on to that blue highlight color and started using it. And you'll see a lot of baits now with that color on them, because it's a good all around color.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it works everywhere.
Dang. Crazy. I know people are probably itching to get up there and experience that for themselves. What's a good way people can get a hold of you if they want to book a trip or just kind of follow you and see what you're up to?
Yeah, you can go on Facebook. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Mohawk Trails Guide Service. That's how we get a lot of our messages through there. You can go to the website, send me an email. The contact numbers on the website, you can get a hold of me that way and stuff like that.
Okay. And just for general reference, you're Hogansburg, but I guess Messina's pretty well known in that area. You're good 2 hours from Thousand Islands. So it's a drive to get up there. It's a commitment. I mean, you're really only what, hour and a half to Lake Champlain?
Yeah, I'm actually right in the middle. I'm an hour and a half to Clayton.
Okay.
I drive from my house to Clayton's hour and a half, and I'm just, I'd say about an hour and 5 minutes to Champlain, Plattsburgh.
Okay. Wow. Man, it's a poke, but it's well worth it.
Yeah. I'm right in the middle of probably some of the best fishing in the whole country, whole United States right here. I'm right smack dab in the middle of it.
Dang. I know. Dude, I've been there. I'm telling you guys, viewers, listeners, it is legit. I think everyone that's serious about smallmouth fishing needs to take a trip there. The spring's awesome. Numbers, yeah. Size, everything. The fall's unique because there's so many bait. Guys that love jerk baiting, I mean, yes. This happens in the spring too, but your fall jerk bait bite is amazing. Your fall Alabama rig bite, swim big, I mean, everything. Silver buddy bite.
You experienced that this past fall.
Yeah, it's crazy. Bite. And if you want to go catch 80 to 100 walleyes while you're up there too, have at it.
Yeah, that's just the 5-minute run to the next spot.
One of these days, you got to get me into those big muskies. You know, I know it's got trophy world-class muskie swimming around there too. That would be I've seen them. I've seen them chase my smallmouth. Never caught one though.
Well, that's the thing about fishing for muskies up here is we catch more muskies when we're smallmouth fishing than we do muskies.
By accident.
I mean, yeah, we do catch a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I've caught a ton of muskies in one day.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems the bigger ones come out when we're smallie fishing or perch fishing or something like that.
Right,
that's
right.
When they come and they usually take our smallies from us.
Dang. All right, I'm sold. I'm going to head back up. I'm packing my bags right now. 7 hours. Here I come. It's well worth it. I've gone up there just for the day and drove back home. That's how good it was.
Well, I mean, just to come up to our area, Lake Ontario, Champlain, Oneida Lake, it's a great area to fish. You come up, you're never disappointed in fishing in the area.
All of upstate New York definitely has some amazing fishing.
It's not only the smallie fishing in those lakes, but the salmon and the walleye around Lake Perry.
Didn't even touch base on the largemouth. Some of the biggest northern largemouth I've ever caught have come out of your waters, punch in with 1.5 ounce weights in that Okeechobee style grass.
Yes.
In the middle of July is pretty fun too.
Yeah.
I mean,
the mats form up here, it's usually, like you said, the middle of July, the mats form. You can spend all day drifting this section of the river. It's like 3-4 miles long. And you can't even cover it all in one day.
Dude, I've never seen anything like it. Where else do you go that in the country and catch 60 to 80 largemouth frogging and flipping and fish up to 6 pounds? That's what I experienced.
Yeah. And then turn around. And that's before lunch.
Yeah.
And then turn around after lunch and go catch 100 smallies.
Exactly. Yeah. Be careful. Will likes to take lunch breaks if you guy with him. He'll try to get you off the water to go grab a sandwich. I'm like, no, buddy, I'm fishing. Nope, got to go get lunch.
Yeah, that's the way Travis is. Travis always does that to me. Makes me starve out there on the boat.
That's right.
That's why I always tell him, make sure you bring your lunch, bring your food. We're not getting off the water.
We're fishing hard.
We're staying out here for 15 days.
I feel like it sometimes, but it's always worth it. It's always worth it. Well, Will, thank you for coming on this podcast. I know our viewers and listeners hopefully piqued their interest. They're excited. There's some places still in this country today that has just craziness. Craziness is all I can say about your waters. I can't wait to get back up there, Will. Thanks again for coming on.
You bet. Anytime, bro.
Awesome, awesome. And as always, until next time, we'll see you guys on the water.
Thanks so much for listening today. Make sure that you're subscribed to the show and follow us on Instagram at Smallmouth Crush. Also, the YouTube channel, Smallmouth Crush. And if you feel so inclined, please leave us a 5-star rating and comment with a review below. And as always, until next time, we'll see you on the water.